Hey, everybody. On today's show, we have Elizabeth Ann Russell from the Russell Family Fetal Alcohol Disorders Association. And gives some amazing insight into what it's like to be a birth mom to an individual with fetal alcohol. So just before we get started, a quick trigger warning. We do talk about addictions. We do talk about mental health. She does explain her situation. So I just, for those who might be sensitive to that, that's just a warning. But other than that, this is amazing and it's some of the best insight I've ever heard. Let's go.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 11 of the FASD Success Show. Tis I, Jeff Noble. Thank you so much for joining me. We are so glad that you are here. As you know, the FASD Success Show is all about promoting and creating and showing success for not only caregivers for individuals with FASD, but, individuals with FASD, those that work with individuals with FASD, all things success with FASD. That's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to show. That's why we are here, and hopefully that is why you're listening. So whether this is your first time or your 11th time, thank you so very much. And of course, don't forget to subscribe. If you do like us and you want to keep hearing from us, you could do so on any platform that you're with, and you could follow, subscribe, whatever the kids are doing nowadays, and you'll get notifications right to your phone. Bada boom, realest guy in the room, how you doing? Okay, I stole that from wrestling. That was quote from wrestling. I thought it was catchy, and so I used it. So whatever. Okay, so I hope you're doing well. I hope everything's going good. I've been on the road, and I'll continue to be on the road until about the second week of April. That's when things usually slow down. And then because of that, I am able to turn my attention more towards our communities, you know, our close Facebook group, our Facebook page. There's thousands of you out there, and we're able to turn our attention to you, and we are going to be coming out with our online program that we do once a year. So there's lots of exciting things happening, but we're just got to get through these last few weeks on the road because I love doing that too. You know what else I love? Let me tell you what I love. I love talking to people. I love talking to people about fetal alcohol. I love talking to people who give great insight about fetal alcohol. And this week's episode is no different. In fact, it might be more because we are going to talk to Elizabeth Ann Russell, who is a birth mom, but like so much more, you know. She's runs an organization, Rafata. She gives talks. She's written books. She does videos. She does a lot within the community, but her story is incredible. And once I was done interviewing her, I literally wanted to run through a brick wall because I was that fired up. You know, back in a few years ago, I had the opportunity to go to both New Zealand and Australia. And in Australia, Anne was the one who set up a lot of the talks that I give and a lot of the venues, and she took care of all of that. So we were on the road a little bit together, and I've had the opportunity to hear her story, and I just knew when I was going to do this podcast that Anne was one of the first people that I got in contact with, and she does not disappoint, and she is very raw and very awesome, and she just puts it all out there. And I'm hoping if you're a birth mom to just soak it in, because she's been through it and she's, you know, going through it, and I consider her, thriving. And even if you're not a birth mom, you could really get a sense of what birth moms go through. She really, like, I felt it, when she's talking. So I just got to do her bio real quick so we can get right into it and we can talk to her about all of the awesome. Ann Russell is a biological mother to two individuals with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. She is also the author of Alcohol and Pregnancy, My Responsible Disturbance. She also runs the organization, RFADA, the Russell Family Fetal Alcohol Disorders Association, and that's a nonprofit health promotion charity dedicated to ensuring that individuals affected prenatally by alcohol have access to diagnostic services, support, and multidisciplinary management planning in Australia, and that their carers and parents are supported with a no blame, no shame ethos. She's amazing. She gives great insight. Sit back and enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, here she is, Elizabeth Ann Russell, Ann Russell, Ann Elizabeth. Which one is it?
Well, it's both, either. Ann, I've been called all my life until I started FASD, and then, I don't know, when I wrote my first book, I wrote it under Elizabeth Russell to try and have some anonymity, but that didn't work out very well. So now I'm both.
Okay, so I am going to stick with Ann.
That would be good.
Ann, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for having me on. I've heard so much about you. I've seen your work. You're doing amazing work
I was there.
Over there, around the world, actually.
But I was there. You brought, you know, with in conjunction with New Zealand, like we have met face to face.
We have.
You have. We have hung out. So this, it's been a couple of years since I've been there. So this is a catch up in the making. So that's why I did not want to have a long chat beforehand, because I just wanted to seem like it is like we're just catching up and talking FASD.
That's right. That's right. I've seen your work face to face, and I don't think, I mean, I think afterwards I got so many messages to say how fantastic it was. They one said he really knows FASD from the deepest perspective. You know, get up and talk about this condition. You have to have what you have, and that's that deeper connection, that understanding. That knowledge isn't understanding. Understanding is when you live with it, you understand it, you know.
Yeah, the knowledge is from doing all the wrong things for a long time, right? And getting your butt kicked until you kind of figure it out. I appreciate you saying those kind things about me, but you know, my head's already big enough. I appreciate it. But we are here, dude, to talk about you. You have an amazing story, and that's why I want to tell everybody about it. And I like to start off interviews by, we'll get to the end game, but how did you get introduced to FASD? Like, what's the origin story?
Origin story. It sounds like Wolverine.
That's what I do. It's like a Marvel movie. Like, how did you become?
Well, unfortunately, I've become well known in FASD circles over the last 20 years because I did what most mothers would consider the worst possible thing. I used alcohol while I was pregnant. But the origin story is, in 2000, my youngest son was going through a really tough time. He was doing things that were bizarre that just weren't part of our values. He was stealing. He was, he'd left school in year 9. Like, that's, you know, you really need to get to year 12 over here. I don't know how it works.
Same. So, yeah, high school, right?
That's right. Yeah. So
he only made it to grade 9.
That's right. And, I'd sort of expected that both my boys would end up in university, but that wasn't the case. And I couldn't figure out why. I didn't know why he was stealing, why he was doing drugs at 13, why he was having sex. I mean, he was just a baby. Anyway, he'd been diagnosed with ADHD by a pediatrician. The vice principal at the school was really, really good. And he suggested that I take Seth to a pediatrician. You know, that he said there's something, well, he didn't say there was something wrong, but he gave me the idea that I needed to go, I needed to take him. Not that I hadn't taken him before. Anyway, right. So he was diagnosed then with ADHD. But these things he was doing just weren't symptoms of ADHD. So I did some research. In those days, we had the internet. There wasn't a great, you know, there wasn't a great amount on there. I remember there was 124,000 hits of fetal alcohol syndrome when I eventually found what was going on with him.
Right.
So anyway, I researched ADHD and found a website. I think it was over in the States, Chad, I think it was. Anyway, it was what other conditions can cause these symptoms? And there was a few things, and then fetal alcohol syndrome. And I'm a recover at that stage. I was 2 years into my recovery, and it was just clear. It was just obvious. It was it.
Oh, it that was, just hit you.
It just hit me. I wrote in my book. It my whole world sort of fell apart. I understood what was wrong with him. But yeah, it was not a good time. It was a very, very difficult time to know that. I mean, mothers are meant to be give their lives for their children, which of course I would, but they're not meant to do this thing. I mean, it was an accident. I might have been alcoholic, but what happened was my doctor, my obstetrician at the time, gave me an amniocentesis, which is where they take a little a bit of the amniotic fluid to find out if everything's okay. Mm-hmm. And then he said after that, now go and have a few drinks at the pub with your husband. These are almost his exact words. I remember them vividly. To stop labour, just in case you go into labour. And since then, I found that in the 60s, very early 70s, my boys were born in the early 80s. So in that period, they used to give women alcohol drips in hospital to stop labor.
Uh-huh. Happened to my mom.
Really?
Yeah, it happened to my mom because I'm sure I said it on previous podcasts, and you heard my presentation about my sister. Same thing.
That's right. I'd forgotten there was issues.
The whole point of my presentation was, look, I was a foster parent, and then I've gone on to write books and do all this wonderful things, and I didn't even know FASD was in my own family.
That's right. Yes. Yep.
So I would just want to back up just a little bit. I want to unpack this just a bit. And, dude, thank you for sharing. I know you've done it for a long time, but it's to talk like this is awesome, and I'm grateful for it. So I've never met a mom on the planet that would ever hurt their baby on purpose. Would you subscribe to that?
I would definitely.
Okay. So you were given shitty information. And this is back in the 80s, your alcohol drip, you know, not only we know that alcohol is a disease, and it's not just because you chose to drink like that. That's old news. We, you know, it's a disease. But the culture around you was that of drinking as well, correct?
Well, actually, yes. It's interesting that you say that, because on looking back at the environment when I was pregnant with both my boys, I didn't drink any more or any less than other people around me, pregnant or not. At the time I was pregnant, I don't think I had actually slipped into alcoholism per se. Right. I was just a social drinker. Like I said, no more or no less than the people around me.
See, my father was a miner, and so they would work really, really long shifts. And so, you know, my mom said at the end of the week, you know, when they got their paycheck, they drank, and you know what else, you know, it was nowhere. My mom just said it wasn't, when your physician isn't even putting that in your conscious mind, you don't even think it's an issue.
I stopped smoking. I remember asking my doctor if I could have Panadol. I was so, you know, careful. Mm-hmm. But alcohol just did not enter my head. I think maybe because of what that doctor had said. I don't know.
No, that's fair. And because a lot of moms that either birth moms listening to this, or, you know, moms who think maybe that this could be the issue, this is not on purpose. You know, lack of info, don't know they were pregnant, because as we know, you know, when do you stop? You could stop 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. 6 months, heck, you know, over here, there's a show you could go your whole pregnancy without knowing you're pregnant. In Canada, you know, it's almost close to 60% of pregnancies are unplanned. 80% of our country drinks, if you just do the math, right?
Yep. Now, that's exactly, actually, you know, we've got per capita, the last I looked, Australia was well ahead of Canada. So, I mean, if you have those statistics, ours are obviously going to be very similar. And actually, I know that 50% of pregnancies over here are unplanned, and 61% of this is the last research I remember hearing, 61% of pregnant mums said they've used alcohol.
So this is way deeper, but at the time, you were really searching for answers for what you thought was a different condition with ADHD. And now we know half of all individuals with FASD also have ADHD. Here, saying someone, a doctor said, check this out. And then you had to do the research. It's not even like a doctor told you. Now this is on your shoulders. And so I can't even imagine, like, was it anger, guilt? Like, what was going through your mind once you knew what was going on?
Well, I don't usually talk in this depth when I disclose, because I do a lot of training and I usually disclose. But at this depth, I'm very careful, because I don't want to distress other birth mums. But when I first found out, Jeff, it was like I kept saying to myself, it's like I ran over him in the driveway. It's like I threw him up against a wall and damaged his brain. I felt that absolute crushing anguish. I remember reading, I did psychology a long time ago, and I remember reading unbearable grief, and I wondered what somebody would have to go through to have unbearable grief. And that was as close as I ever wanted to go. That's mm-hmm. just that knowledge that these precious, these babies, these precious children that you.
I get it, man. And I'm glad you went in depth. No, listen, I'm glad you went in depth, because I want folks who might still stigmatize birth moms to know that there's nothing you can say or do to make make them feel any worse. There's nothing you like. That's why I love birth moms. My mom's a birth mom. We know tons of birth moms, and there's a lot of birth moms. And so what you might have just said might have just rung so true to others, but also so people could empathize a little bit more with birth moms, because I hear it all the time. I hear it, from foster parents, from adoptive parents. They'll say, birth mom didn't show up to this. Birth mom would rather do drugs. Birth mom this, you know, and they start explaining the symptoms that their foster and adoptive kids have. Mm-hmm. So, you know what they say, a diagnosis of FASD is a diagnosis for two.
Yeah.
Two patients, right? Dr. Gail Andrews, there's the mom and the baby. So I'm not getting on a high horse, but I'm glad you went deep, because I just want people to really know that that's how birth moms, probably often feel.
Oh, yes. And look, I can understand why perhaps a birth mom wouldn't show up. I mean, the shame, the grief is mm-hmm. grief and loss. There's everything that you can imagine is rolled up into that little package, and not showing up and doing drugs is probably the only way that some of these mums can get through each day. I mean, if I was ever going to drink again, it would have been then.
Right. That was my very next question. This is, you know, 2 years, but that's still in recovery. That's still pretty early.
It is.
How did you not?
I think I thought that if I started to drink again, I would be engaging with the devil sort of thing, engaging with the very thing that my children had caused this damage to my boys. And I think I wanted to be able to show them in the future, and they were probably, you know, they were still young teenagers, very young teenagers. I wanted to be able to hold my head up at least in some way so that they knew it was a mistake. And I did, from that moment on, I did everything I possibly could to help them, to keep them safe and to not go back to the thing that hurt them. It was a conscious choice.
And in that moment, that's a very easy reason to relapse or to slip up, but to say that you made that choice, that's pretty awesome, dude. You could be the movie of the week easily. Now, how did we put one foot in front of the other? So you decided, okay, this is it. This is what I'm not going to do.
Mm-hmm.
What was your next move? Was it now to try and figure out how to help your boys? Where did you go from there?
No, I spent about 3 months trying to move on, or move just a little bit outside of that turmoil. I went to I went to a counselor several times during that time. I tried to figure out how I was going to tell them, because I hadn't said anything at that point. I wondered if my husband would leave me. I mean, he, you know, a husband, a father and his sons, they're pretty tight, you know. As it happens, it looks like my husband might have FASD as well, from all accounts. But anyway,
this is what happens. You're just like, I didn't know my own family. You don't know your own family, and it just opens up. And, you know, we're not being like conspiracy theorists. Like, it's the facts. No. It's the largest cause of developmental disabilities in the world. So the fact that your husband is probably on the spectrum, that totally could make sense as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, his family have all some sort of difficulties with academically. Of course, mum and dad were I think they got pregnant just after the war. So there's the trauma, epigenetics factors in. It all makes sense. Dad was an alcoholic. So yeah, I mean, and then now I understand some of the little just things that he does that, you know, cause problems, but I
absolutely. Absolutely. So let's keep going with the stories. So you spent about 3 months, you're in counseling, and you haven't told a single person. Do you remember who you told first?
I think at the time I was working with a lot of psychs and psychologists and occupational therapists. Mm-hmm. There was one psych there that I talked to. I don't know how it happened or why it happened. It was just one of those things. Anyway, so she would have been the first person, apart from the therapist that I was seeing. And I don't know. Yeah, I didn't tell anyone. I couldn't.
Did it feel good to say it? Did it, like, was it a weight? Like, I don't know. That's why I'm so curious.
No, it definitely wasn't. It wasn't a weight lifted at all. And I don't know that it ever has been. I don't think there's any one thing that ever has lifted that weight. I mean, I try not to dwell too much on it at training, and certainly not on day to day. But every so often, it kicks you. You know,
when like a wave of grief.
Yes, that's right. When things are going well, you know, for some reason your subconscious or my subconscious brings it up and dusts it off and says, yeah, you might be here, but look what you've done. Or, yeah, you might have a good job, but look what you've done. Or, yes, you might have been nominated for some award for doing FASD work, but it's only because this is what you've done, you know?
Yeah, well, you know what? Tell your subconscious to shut its mouth or I'll kick its ass. but you're saying all the stuff that, and I hope people are, birth moms are listening. And you never know. And someone might listen to this and say, I have to tell somebody. Like, this might start somebody's healing, right? So there's power in your words, m'lady. Now, where did we go? Where did we go? So, like, what was going on in school? Were you clamoring for information? Like, what was happening?
So, yeah, I did that Google search, and 124,000, I remember that figure, but I'm sure it's triple, quadruple that now, so much more. I don't know what I found first, but I can't remember how it happened, but it led me to the first conference I went to where I met Sterling Claren, and that was in Whitehorse. But before that, I knew I had to tell my family and my extended family, because both boys were getting into a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And I could see that friends were drawing away. My friends were drawing away from the boys, and their friends were coming and going very quickly. So I really still didn't know a lot about FASD, Jeff. I mean, I read and I read and I read, but I didn't understand it. I really didn't have a clue at that stage. So I told my husband, took quite a bit of courage. I told him what I thought had happened to the boys, and why Seth in particular was behaving in the way he was, why he'd just lost his third or fourth or fifth job, even though he was still only 15 at that, 14 or 15. And I can't remember how he took it. I think he took it well. He didn't yell or scream or
he didn't leave.
I'm going to leave or anything like that. You know, no, he was a credit to himself that he took it all in his stride. And then we talked about how we were going to tell the boys what we were going to do. So the next day I got the boys and my husband in the kitchen where, everybody talks in the kitchen.
Everybody does.
Yeah. And I said to them, I said, I think I know why you might not have done very well at school. And Seth, why you're having so much trouble now with work and a few things. And, of course, they said, why? Not interested really in that point, just still eating. I said, I think it's because when I was pregnant with you both, I used alcohol. Still not interested. Then I started crying, and that sort of piqued their interest a bit. And I said, I think you have fetal alcohol syndrome. And I remember Mick, the oldest son, saying, well, what does that mean? What does that mean for us? Like, what do we have to do? And I really don't remember very much after that. I think that was sort of like, what trauma does to you. It sort of stops you from remembering things. Uh-huh. But, I think we probably had a bit more of a talk. I probably calmed down a bit. Peter probably said a few things. But in the end, it was that I was going to pursue it. I was going to find out more about it. I was going to take them both to a doctor. We were going to get a diagnosis, and we were going to work out how best to help them.
Right.
Which should have been easy, Jeff. It should have been,
yes. But to find out, it's the opposite.
Absolutely the opposite. So I went to my GP first. I didn't take the boys. I told him what I thought was up with them. I took him a lot of information that I'd got from the internet, and he said, look, I don't know much about this condition. I said, well, do you want to hang on to this and read through it? Because he was our family doctor. Yeah. He said, no. I said, okay. And, yeah, that was all I can remember from that meeting.
Yeah, not even interested.
No, no. Like, wouldn't you sort of want to find out?
Sometimes, you know, they think the parents are part of the problem. And also talking to some other doctors, that there's often ego involved.
Yes, and I think that was the case with this doctor, because he was, I think he was maybe the AMA rep or something for, that's the Australian Medical Association. So, you know, has a high standing, a high profile or high-ish profile in the town. And maybe he didn't want to, you know, take that step and say, well, yeah, look, I really don't understand about it. I will find out and get back to you. So, I mean, that's all it takes. That's all a doctor needs to do, just to acknowledge the fact that there may be something that they don't know that would change everything. But
absolutely, and make you feel less crazy.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I felt like a complete idiot at just about every, until I went over and met Dr. Claren. My experience with medical professionals, pediatricians, psychiatrists, psychologists, and GPs was that I was neurotic. I was the problem, and my children were just normal kids.
How are they with this news now? You know, moving forward, did they feel any different, or did it make things worse? Because oftentimes we hear about the grief and loss coming out there. How are they handling this?
No, I don't think either of them really, you know, the cause and consequence thing. I don't think they really put a lot of thought into it. I don't think so. My youngest son, when he experienced subsequent, in inverted commas, failures, to him they were failures, he started blaming me.
Right.
So he started, now this is your fault. And this is his go-to when he becomes psychotic or when bad things happen. This is his go-to. This is all your fault. But I know it's not him. And when he's psychotic, he doesn't ever remember saying it. But right. it hurts really badly. It really hurts. But I understand that he doesn't really understand at the time he's saying it. He's beyond, you know, rational thought. But anyway, so he, no, I don't recall a lot of goings on within that area. It was primarily me sort of developing my network.
Because you end up building this massive network. So how's this, like, what are you doing? You don't meet Dr. Claren right away.
Well, no, I don't. That was probably about 12 months, I think. It was the 2001 Northern Prairie Conference in Whitehorse in the Northwest Territories.
Yeah, I was literally just there.
Oh, were you?
That's where I was, yeah, in the Yukon, yeah.
Ah, yes, I remember that vividly, actually. Meeting Sterling, meeting Dr. Claren was just like my mouth, my jaw just, he must have thought I was.
Well, did you hear him first, or did you talk to him first?
No, I heard him speak, and I heard him talk about birth bums. I think he was, he may have just finished his research or one of the research that he did on birth mums. And I remember him saying what you said, that he's never met a birth mum who meant to hurt their child. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying too, he was in a hospital. There was this mum, I think, who'd had her eighth alcohol-affected child, and he went to her and he said, why do you keep having more children? And she said, because you keep taking them away. And to me, that was, it just, you know, to find a medical professional, albeit a researcher, who had that empathy and that understanding was not my experience. You know, to find someone who understood and was actually asking questions of mothers, why did you, you know, not in an interrogatory way, not in a nasty way, but in a, I want to find out more, I want to be, I want you to know that I'm there for you type of way.
Yeah.
Was just not my experience, and I just had to meet him. So I introduced myself after, during one of the breaks, I think. And I was the only Australian at the first three or four of Vancouver conferences, even though that was in Whitehorse. Yeah, the only Australian for a long time, I remember.
You go to this conference and everybody's talking FASD. That must have been astounding.
Oh, that was like, it was just amazing. I mean, I didn't say very much. I just listened and nodded and smiled. But the information that I got was that people did know about this condition and they did understand it. And I came away thinking that I did too, because I'd been to this conference. I knew about it. And I remember, I'm not sure if it was that one or the next one, hearing Jan Luttke speak and thinking to myself, I don't even know why I'm here. My boys are doing really well. I think I'm a fraud, you know. Maybe they don't have this, and maybe I've just imagined it because it sounds really bad. And my boys were doing really well. Of course, everything falls apart while you're away. And when I came home, everything had changed from doing really well to, you know, police and.
So you say, listen, you're over there, you go to Canada and, you know, you fill up an information and then you come back to Australia and it's still dust. Nobody knows anything.
Yes. I went to another doctor. I remember going to about four or five in all before I gave up. Not gave up, but just stopped going. And this one said to me, because I explained that I said I'd been to a conference. I said, you know, this is what I'm sure this is what he's got. He's got all the symptoms. And he looked at me and he said, why are you doing this to yourself? And I can't remember what I said, but I should have said, or maybe I did say, because my son's suicidal and I need help with him. You know, I can't do this on my own. But, yeah, it was like, why are you doing this to yourself? And I'm thinking, it's not about me. What are you talking about? It was just weird.
When does this transition into the organization like you have now?
So it took a few years. And during that time, I had more meetings with Dr. Claren. And in 2005, I wrote my first book, was published.
Yeah, say the name. We're shameless self-promoters here.
Oh, alcohol and pregnancy, my responsible disturbance.
At the time,
it was definitely a disturbance. I got a lot of publicity for that first book. Radio.
Yeah, people don't realize that if they just Google you on YouTube or whatever, you're no stranger to a camera and a reporter in your face.
That's right. At the time, of course, in 2005, it was only just starting. But anyway, that was actually one of my biggest fears. Birth mums, if you're listening to this, I would have rather faced death than a camera. I would have rather, I was so shy when they did my Myers-Briggs. I was almost the highest you can get in introversion. And in my life, I probably still am, but I've developed those skills so that I can go on TV, which I'm doing next week for the ABC here. You know, so please, if you're frightened of talking, we need more birth mums to speak out. Consider it as a possibility in your future. And I can tell you, if I can do it, anyone can do it. I will.
Yeah, planting the seed, right? Yeah, absolutely. Planting the seed. So you write your book and you get a little bit of press, right?
That's correct. And at the time, I knew it was I chose the words responsible disturbance because, you know, you just have to put that down in the internet or say the words in a group and you get, it's like talking about politics and religion. You get both sides, you know, ending up in fisticuffs. But I thought that it really accurately described what I wanted to do. It was responsible of me to speak up, I thought. It was my responsibility, rather. But it was going to cause problems because all of those women who didn't realise at the time how devastating alcohol and pregnancy can be to the child, were going to either read it or see me or read about it or whatever. Not that it wasn't there before. I'm not saying that I was the first birth mum in Australia. But anyway, so I chose those words because I thought they would accurately describe what I was trying to achieve. What happens in Australia, unfortunately, is that it peaks. So you get FASD is a big issue for like 2 weeks and then it goes away and until the next thing. There's nothing consistent about the
in terms of coverage and in terms of it being staying in the, you know, in the collective subconscious of society is what you're saying. Like people hear it and especially newsreels now, right? It just turns over so fast.
Exactly. That's right. So what happened was I did this and then 2 years later I realized that's what was happening. That I had this great big, you know, thing on TV and then nothing. And then something else happened and we had a little bit of publicity and then nothing. So I decided to establish the Russell Family Fetal Alcohol Disorders Association, or RAFADA for ease, because I just had to. There was no other organisation in Australia that had a birth mum at its core. And I think that is critical. You can go into a birth mum can talk in a group of people, of birth mums, and it's not a judgment. It's saying, I've been there too. I've done this thing. You're not being blamed and shamed. So we have a great, we can do things that maybe other people can't.
So we have
a great responsibility to do that.
You may be female, but you have a big pair of balls. I'm going to tell you that right now. Like, it does take it. It does take that, right? Do you remember, so who starts asking you, are you volunteering to do workshops? Are you asking, are people asking you?
I think a colleague, I think it was a colleague who knew my story by then, had left that organisation wherever I was working, because RAFADA has always been volunteer. It's I've always had to work full-time in other jobs and RAFADA is my volunteer, FASD is my volunteer work. So when she left, she went to train at what we call TAFE, which is our state government technical and further education type organization, and she was delivering training on social work for social workers, certificates and diplomas in social work, and she asked me to present on FASD, and that was my first experience.
Were you worried about doing that, like what people would call you, or like were you worried about any reprimand, or was it just straight up frightening to get in front of people?
It was everything was overrun by my fear of talking in public, but I didn't disclose in those early days.
Well, that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I was just talking about FASD. If somebody had asked me, I think I may have, but I don't think they did at all.
But then are you hearing people say negative things about birth moms in your trainings?
Actually, I'm hearing more now than I heard in those days.
Interesting.
Yes, it is. And I think it's because maybe more people are aware, and those people who are aware of the problems think that everybody else is as well. And that is definitely not the case.
Yes, assume no one knows. That's what I tell, you know, my participants in my course. Just assume your doctor, lawyer, social worker, principal, your neighbor, they don't know. You live it every day. Like, you know, I'm in it every day. You would assume, but people still have no idea. Did you ever do a workshop and maybe when you started to disclose and have a birth mom come up to you?
It's more like, did I ever not have someone come up to me?
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
So, yes, from every walk of life, from every level of education, at almost, and I say almost like a very small minority, at almost every presentation, conference, training session that I've done, somebody or many somebodies have come up and lined up in some cases and said, now I know what's wrong with my child. I didn't have a clue. I didn't even come here because of that. I came here because it was part of something that I had to do or training that I had to do. And I think that this is what has happened. Because
that's so powerful. So, Anne, you don't think, you know, I'm not a particularly religious type myself, but you don't think maybe cosmically that happened to you so you could help them?
It's really funny that you say that, Jeff, because I think in a strange way I found my reason for living because of this. So it's really strange how things sort of tag together, but I remember vividly when I was maybe 7, 8, 9 years old in a group of kids. We all sort of got round and we were talking about what we wanted to be when we grew up, and there was, you know, fireman and nurse and doctor. And when it came to me, I said I wanted to save someone's life. And I have no idea where that came from, and the others looked at me like I was did I really say that? But It was something that had always been with me. I wanted to save someone's life. And when I found out, of course, that I had done this to my boys, it was like the opposite. It was just like I'd done,
the worst thing imaginable, right?
The worst thing imaginable, right. Yes.
But that goes against your very core principle being, and yet you still cause the accident. The one, you know, I could never understand, but so I always try and empathize. Like what I think would make it harder is it's not like some people have made some really terrible mistakes in their life, but the mistake kind of goes away. Like the event is over. It happened. Now it's tough for, you know, birth moms because the constant reminders you know, that your kids are growing up and they're still around.
That's right. No matter how old they are, child for life. But this wanting to save someone's life, getting back to that, while I have, you know, while my boys have FASD, I believe that in some way I've maybe saved some lives. Like one lady came up to me maybe 2 years ago and said, I didn't drink in my pregnancy because of you. my child will not have FASD because I came to one of your, and that, like, oh, I'm, you know, I mean, almost in tears now thinking about it, because that, just her saying that has just made everything almost not worthwhile.
Almost like bearable.
Bearable, yeah, yeah.
Like you said, you still take that with you and it still comes up. But, you know, that happens sometimes. Like, you hear about these stories all the time where something horrific or tragic, and then it changes an individual's life. Now, you know, I know it's tough because you still have your boys, and you know, I'm not sure how they are doing. But I wanted to focus on you, because I'm hoping lots of birth moms listen to this. I'm talking about moms in general, because you decided to speak up, and you, like, have created this organization, and you now train, you've written books, you're on the TV, and I know, even from myself, you're not doing that for the notoriety. You're doing that so people can hear, and maybe they're watching the news and they hear your story one time and they say, well, shit, that sounds like my kid.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So you're planting all these seeds. And I think it's awesome. And you're still, so how long is, so 2005, your organization has been around and you have trained all over the place. You're still doing it now, right?
I have to do it in between, you know, when I can, like in the afternoons or evenings or weekends. But still do it. Run a face-to-face support group and put in submissions to the government. You know, still the same lobby, you know, network on various organizations on the board, not the boards, but, you know, on consumer groups. So, yep, still doing it. It's now, there's many more people involved in FASD, and the network in Australia is huge compared to what it was. Absolutely huge. In every state, there's a champion, you know, or many, many champions. And so, it's not about one person now. It's about, you know, researchers, medical professionals, diagnostic clinics, pediatricians, psychiatrists. They're all speaking up now. And so, yes, I would hope that if somebody did some statistics, they'd find that it's much more in public eye now than it was 20 years ago. Yeah.
Well, there's even, you have a national conference now.
Yes, we do. In fact, we've got one at the end of this year. So we have had, it looks like it's biannual. So the last one was in Perth.
Right.
I don't organize that. That's
okay. But the point is, that's happening.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And I think that's amazing. What is some of the practical advice that you would give to a birth mom? Like, when you talk to them, is there a certain set of things you say? Like, what is, give us your best, like, you know, not best, but what is some of the advice that you give to birth moms?
I guess that it would be twofold. And it's about that, what we were saying, or what you were saying before about a diagnosis for two. I tell mum, you have to look after yourself. Go to counseling. Do whatever you can to look after yourself. It sounds trite and it sounds like a cliche, but it's so important for birth mums, any mum, but birth mums in particular, to look after themselves, because if they're not looking after themselves, they won't be able to cope with their children and the behaviours of their children, and probably even worse, the behaviours of the professionals who were supposed to be out there helping, and who often are not doing that. So that's my first thing, is I don't even tell mums not to blame themselves, because I know that that's absolutely
right.
And it's almost a kick in the face, because they're going to, and nobody is going to be able to, well, I shouldn't say that. I think there's a way to come to terms with it, and I think there's a lot of birth mums or a few birth mums who are able to do that. And by coming to terms with it, I mean, you know, not letting it consume you. So yes, it's going to come up probably for the rest of, well, for the rest of your life, but your day-to-day life is still going to go on, and it's going to become less impactful when you do think about it. But in the early stages, it is going to try and consume you. Don't let it. And
I like that. I like what you said. It's going to try to consume you, but don't let it. Sorry, I cut you off. That was just a good point.
No, that's fine. And the second thing, obviously, is, okay, what happens now? What do I do for my child? And that's usually the thing that mum first asks. How do I help my child? What do I do now? And it goes with what you were saying earlier and what Stella and Claren was saying, that I never met a mum who wanted to hurt their child. I've never met a mum who didn't want to do everything for their child, which makes it really upsetting to think that so many doctors over the years have not wanted to upset mum, and so they haven't given a diagnosis, the proper diagnosis, or they haven't mentioned that their child may have FASD. It just flies in the face of what a mum is. Anyway, getting back to... So
okay. Keep going. There's no such thing as anyway. And you go anywhere you want, man. Honest, you got something to say, you say it, dude.
Well, you're really squeezing it out. I mean, I haven't talked at this depth forever. I don't
care. That's because we're buddies, though. We're buddies. You know that this is going and coming from a good place. Like,
absolutely.
So that's why I am so happy that you're doing this. Like, because I know for a fact this is going to impact. And the amount of people that listen to the show, it could be worth, you know, 50 trainings of you, you know, telling folks. And I can only imagine people listen. They're going to be listening in their car. If you're in your car, what's up? You know, if they're on the run anywhere, and your words matter. So I'm glad. So it has meaning for sure. How do you take care of yourself now? How do you manage now? Like, this is not over, right? You're still in it every single day.
Oh, yes, that is for sure. So my young son is 34. My oldest son is 37. Mm-hmm. And I have grandchildren now with FASD and autism and all the things that go with that generational stuff. Mm-hmm. So I make sure I work is a distraction. Work is good. So I keep working. Financial, that's important as well. But also I have projects. I mean, I'm a creative wannabe. So I always have something.
What do you do? Do it. Tell us. What do you create? What do you do? What's your thing?
I do like woodwork, but sometimes that can be a bit heavy. I like making things. I like art, anything sort of creative, sculpting, you know, all that sort of stuff. So
yeah, that's cool.
It's fun.
But it fills your cup.
It does. It fills that creative hole, and it also helps me to focus on something other than you know, issues that my boys might be going through. So that's really important. I try to eat well. I try. I think I have an addiction to sugar right now, so I'm going to have to work on that.
Okay, man. But you know what that also says? No, you've reached this state, and I mean reached in terms of experience, and you're still working on stuff. Because what I don't want people is to listen to this and say, well, she's got her shit together, you know. I can't achieve that. That's my point, is that, you know, you're still dealing. You will always deal, but you are better equipped now than when you started. Would you say that?
Yes. Yeah, I am. I'm more used to the words birth mum. I'm more used to the words fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and more used to my boys' issues. And I think, you know what, I think a lot of the healing that I've done has been done through other people. And I don't know whether that's a common thing, but knowing that I've made a difference to some people has helped me hugely. You know, even if you can tell mums, if you can just tell one person and make that one person say to you what that one mum said to me, that will never go away. I did not drink because of you. I could have because I drink, but I didn't because I heard you speak. That was huge.
It has generational impact.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, it does.
But I'm saying also the positive effect. So this woman says she didn't drink in her pregnancy. What if that, like, stopped that generational stuff going on right there? So you might not know your impact for a few generations, but what are you going to do?
And that's okay. I mean, that helps too. So I would say having something that you do for yourself, my projects, my little creative outlets, eating well, attending to your body, understanding when you're tired and that it's okay to sit down, understanding when you are stressed and anxious and it's okay to take meds if you have to, or whatever you need to do to help you with your anxiety and depression, because it's going to happen. Depression is about what's happened in the past. Anxiety is about what's going to happen in the future. And, boy, that is full on for a birth mum. So, you know, watch those things. Understand that if you do think that you've got anxiety and depression, it's not an indictment on your strength or your ability to cope. It's your body saying that, you know, you're under, and mothers of children with FASD are under huge chronic stress, and that does damage to your body. So attend to your body, understand what it's telling you. And look, if you've got a faith, that's awesome. I think a faith is can be very helpful to birth mums. Understanding the will of God or Buddha or whoever, is, it's very important. So I think
No, that's nice. That's why. Do you see? This conversation was awesome because we didn't talk beforehand. So, you know, I didn't really know, and you didn't really know where this was going. But I'm glad it totally went here. Now, if someone's listening to this and they're, you know, either a caregiver, you know, frontline worker, birth mom, how can they get in touch with your organization? How can they, or if they're hearing this and we say, we got to get this girl to do a workshop in our city, how do they get in touch with you?
We have a website. Just Google, Russell Family. I think even Google my name and I think it'll come up. The website is rffada.org. Pretty straightforward, given the huge name that I ended up giving it. Just Anne Russell and FASD should get you to the website, and my contact details are on there. Just to make life more complicated, my actual email address is elizabeth@rffada.org.
Dude, this was awesome. This was I don't want to say it was better than I thought it was going to be. But it's because I know every time we talk, it's awesome. But this is amazing. And I am going to make sure in my power that I make every single birth mom that I ever run into to listen to this. And now I have something very powerful that they can listen to, you know, for as long as I'm doing this. So honestly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff, because like I said, I haven't ever spoken at this depth ever. It might be in my books, but it hasn't. You've teased or squeezed.
There was no 60 minutes here. We just started talking, and like, you should see my notes. There are none. The whole point of this show is I want it, because like I said, I've been lucky enough to go all around the world to speak about fetal alcohol, and I've had amazing conversations with people just like yourself. So I want to create this show that if someone is, it's like they're sitting at the table with us and they're listening to this.
Yeah.
And so if a birth mom was sitting at the table with us, you know, you would say these things.
Yeah. Another thing that I wanted when I was a newbie to FASD was concise information on a specific subject. So if my son was yelling and screaming about something, or I'm having a meltdown, I wanted to know how to fix the meltdown, how to stop it, how to work on that, and not have to read like a research paper or 16 pages to find, you know, two words about it. So what I did then was to we've got a YouTube channel. It's under the whole name, so Russell Family Fetal Alcohol Disorders Association, unfortunately, and it's got our logo. So for every subject that I could think of, I've got a concise YouTube video on it. So it's not like a whole thing and then you have to wade through, you know, half an hour and find little bits that you want. It's specifically about issues. So if any mum wants to take a look at that, it's there.
No, they should. And that's how I first found you, to be honest. And you were posting them on Facebook. That's, yes, you know your shit. I know we talked a lot about birth mom and your experience, but you know what you're talking about. And so you give great information and you're warm too. So that's always nice when somebody's warm is presenting the information. Do you remember when we were first texting? Because we were at the Vancouver conference.
Yes.
And we were texting each other and we were at the same table.
Yes, that's right.
And you didn't see me. And I was watching you. I watched you come into the room and I was waving, but you were looking at your phone answering me. You literally sat down at our same table and continued to. And then I was like, "Ann, look up."
That's right. Well, I remember.
It's fun. And you know, that's the good part of this too. And there's friendships are developed because of this. So that's also a byproduct. And, you know, I would consider you one of those. So thanks, dude. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you for doing this and helping so many other birth mums. I think it's so important what you're doing.
Wow. Well, you know, when you feel like you've been a part of something special, I totally have that feeling right now. The interview was amazing. Again, we didn't plan on it going this way, and I just wanted to have a natural conversation, but I think it's so important. Why? Because birth moms. So I'm glad we went there. I'm glad it went this way. I'm glad we could talk about birth moms. She shared her story so well. You know, I wasn't joking when it should be movie of the week. I know we talk about that a lot with our lives, but what she's been able to overcome, everything from finding out and using the words like crushing anguish, this has made me way more empathetic. And I thought I was empathetic towards birth moms because I love birth moms. I love moms. We all came from a mom. We all came from somewhere, right? Somebody's mom. Love your moms. Birth moms. Doesn't matter. If you're a mom, love them. Just how she talks about telling her husband and her kids and her worries about having her husband leave her. These are all legit worries. And so just summoning the courage to not only confirm and to talk and to share, but her absolute dedication to learning and traveling like Australia to the Yukon, man, that is far. And she talks about meeting Dr. Sterling. Well, Dr. Sterling is a pioneer in FASD research. Heck, CanFASD, the Canada FASD Research Network has an award after him. And to go all the way there just to learn and to open up the very one of the first organizations with a birth mom at the helm is amazing. And I love what she talks about, even having early conversations with her doctor, and it was just dismissed. And, you know, for the most part, I think that even happens to this day. But I love how she just gives hope and gives courage to birth moms, and how she encourages birth moms and anybody. We encourage anybody just to speak up about it, to share your story, because it's valid and it's important. And she said, I would have rather faced death than a camera. But with all those odds, the judgment, the stereotypes, the you know, the things that were said to her about her. But at the end of the day, she's saying she found her reason for living because of this. And isn't that an amazing way to look at this? And even as if you're a foster or adoptive or grandma, grandpa, and it's, you're not a bio parent, but just think about what this is teaching you and what you're going through, because she has been through some stuff. And I bet you, we only did this for an hour, we haven't covered a fraction, right? If we really went into the timeline. And then she started the group and she does teachings and trainings. And I love how she really focused on talking about helping you find what it is. Like, she's a creative person. We've talked about this a couple episodes before with Jennifer Shaddle, who sings, like finds their muse. What do you do? Even previous episodes with Yvonne, what she does. And it was powerful to hear when she said, when I asked the question, who does anybody come up to you? And she said, who doesn't come up to me? And I have the absolute privilege to have that happen to me at trainings. And it is an honor when that happens. But now I'll be more empathetic. Not that I wasn't, but I'll be more understanding in what they're going through and how that's, I won't take that for granted when, not that I do, but you know what I mean. When somebody comes up to me, usually I wait to give a hug, but I think I'll give a hug right away. I like how she talks about anxiety and depression. And what a great word she used. It's not an indictment on your strength or your ability to cope. It's your body saying you're under chronic stress. Somebody put that on a flipping meme. Isn't that true? So I hope this gives you some insight into birth moms. And if you're a birth mom, I hope this gives you hope. And know that somebody is out there and using what has happened to make a difference. And in some way, she says she's saving people's lives, and I believe it. And possibly she could, listening to this, or possibly you're hearing this, and it might start you on a healing journey, maybe as being a bio mom, possibly. Or if you have a sibling who is a bio parent, or a son or a daughter who is a bio parent. Let's not forget the dads too when it comes down to this. Judgment, shame, and anger has never fixed a problem, has never solved an issue. So let's try the other way. Let's try with empathy, love, and understanding to help people not feel like garbage, so we can start lifting people up. That's what our job is. That's what our job is. That's what my job is, to lift you up, man, because you are awesome. You are the best. You know, just hang out with me and I'll just tell you how good you are, and we'll get through it every single week. This is an amazing. You want the show notes, FASDsuccess.com/podcast. You could get all the resources that she talked about. You can, you know, her book. She has amazing videos. I am going to put the YouTube link for y'all in the show description, because she knows her stuff. We have another excellent episode next week. This was cool. I love doing the show. I hope you're liking listening to it. This is the hardest job on the planet, but you're worth it. You are not a bad parent. Your kid is not a bad kid. Your client is not a bad kid. Just misunderstood. Let's keep learning from each other and hanging out so we can change our understanding, and then we can change other people's understanding, and we can have successful parents, successful kids. We can steer this ship. We can change the narrative of what it means to live with, associate, raise, be in the arena of FASD.
So until next time, I love you lots. Have a great week. If you need to get a hold of me, get a hold of me. And I can't wait to meet you back here. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, bye-bye.